It is 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Monday, December 22nd on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. Filling in for Ashlyn O'Hara, I'm Jake Dye. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, a children's book was written and is being sold to raise funds to support people impacted by Typhoon Halong. But first, Governor Mike Dunleavy is eyeing a property tax break for the long-planned Alaska LNG project. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the proposal is drawing pushback from legislators and from local officials.
Dunleavy's tax proposal would give the project a 90% discount on the state's normal property tax for oil and gas infrastructure. He described his plans in an interview with the Anchorage Daily News. The Republican governor's spokesperson confirmed the proposal, but declined to make Dunleavy or another member of the administration available for an interview. The state shares oil and gas property tax revenue with local governments, and some local leaders are raising concerns about Dunleavy's proposal.
We can't subsidize that project. We at least have to cover our costs.
That's Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Peter Michicki. He says he expects the project would be a boon for the state, and he says a natural gas export terminal would likely bring thousands of jobs to the Kenai Peninsula. But he says a low property tax rate for the project would essentially push some of the project's cost onto local taxpayers.
We're going to have impacts on our schools. We're going to have impacts on emergency services. For sure, we're likely going to be the agencies they turn to for their emergency response plans, like all of the other oil and gas facilities do.
Plans for a North Slope gas pipeline and an export terminal in South Central Alaska have been in the works for years, but they've taken on new life in the second Trump administration. The state has turned over the project to a private developer, Glenfarne, which has put out a steady stream of announcements about agreements with possible customers, investors, and suppliers. But the project has plenty of skeptics, too, who argue that the project, last estimated at $44 billion, would be too expensive to make financial sense. A consulting firm contracted by the state legislature to examine the project, Gaffney Klein, told lawmakers last month they may need to make a variety of changes to help the pipeline become a reality, including changes to property taxes. In a statement, a spokesperson for project developer Glenfarne said the company had not seen the specifics of Dunleavy's proposal and couldn't offer an opinion. Michicki says he's open to tax breaks that would support a pipeline, but he says local governments need to be involved in determining what exactly those might be. And at least so far, he says that hasn't happened.
There is a deal to be had here. But it has to be born from facts, real math, local impact data. It has to be transparently and fairly negotiated between all involved in good faith.
In an email, Dunleavy spokesperson Jeff Turner said the bill hadn't yet been drafted, so he said it's premature to say the proposal was developed without their input. And he said essentially that the proposed deal is better than nothing. The state and municipalities are currently making no money on an LNG pipeline because it doesn't exist. Fairbanks Representative Maxine Dybert, a Democrat who co-chairs the State House Resources Committee, says she plans to discuss Dunleavy's bill with local officials. But she says she plans to focus much of her attention this session on a separate bill that would require the project to include a smaller lateral pipeline to supply Fairbanks with gas to cut energy costs.
And for me, that is a line in the sand that it needs to be guaranteed part of the project.
Republican Senator Jesse Bjorkman, who represents the Central Kenai Peninsula, says he's on the fence about Dunleavy's proposal. He says he'd like to learn more about the project's finances to determine what's necessary. But in any case, he says it would make little sense to cut the project to break on property taxes after Glenfarne makes a final investment decision, or FID.
If they're going to have an FID decision in January next month, then that cake is already baked. Like, the financials are already in place.
Glenfarne declined to say when exactly it expects to make a final investment decision on the pipeline. That's essentially the formal green light for the project. The company says it's, quote, rapidly progressing towards a final investment decision and that the project remains on schedule to deliver its first gas to Alaskans in 2029. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
ICE is starting to block channels at Homer Harbor, limiting access for some boats. And as KBBI's Simon Lopez reports, that's an ongoing concern with cold temperatures in the forecast.
Drifting ice is reshaping access at Homer Harbor, with sheets blowing in from Mud Bay at the base of the spit. And one worry is that wind and tides can turn a clear channel into an ice blockade in just a few hours. Homer Harbormaster Matt Clark says that congestion affects vessels differently. A steel crabber might push through easily, while fiberglass skiffs can get stuck when the outgoing tide packs the ice together.
Conversely, on the ebb, as the amount of surface area of water that is present, like in the channel entrance, diminishes, some of that ice condenses and it gets more difficult to force your way through.
Seawater ice in the harbor is usually soft enough to support a boat, officials say. Clark warns the real danger is internal, like a vessel's plumbing that pulls seawater in for cooling. If those lines aren't winterized, the water inside them can freeze and burst the pipe. That damage often goes unnoticed until the weather warms up, the ice plug melts, and the boat begins to flood. Deputy Harbormaster Aaron Glidden says the safest way to avoid freeze damage is to pull boats out of the water for winter. But the launch ramp can become impassable at low tide, making that difficult.
It becomes sometimes unusable, depending on how much ice is made, and like the ice will come in on the high tide and then it'll get deposited on the ramp as the tide recedes.
Glidden says crews use floaters to clear the ramp when possible. Boaters can check the harbor entrance webcam on the city's website, but Clark warns conditions change quickly and urges anyone moving a boat to call the harbor office first. Meanwhile, temperatures are supposed to dip into the teens within the next week, meaning the ice issue might not go away anytime soon. In Homer, I'm Simon Lopez.
In the weeks since Typhoon Halong hit western Alaska, aid has come in the forms of subsistence food donations, donated clothing, and contributions to relief funds. KYUK's Samantha Watson reports how one writer looked to her creative gifts when searching for a way to help those who had lost everything.
When writer Lonnie Holes heard the news about Typhoon Halong, she was across the country in Hawaii, where she lives.
I couldn't help with each video that I watched online, people posting about the disaster and afterwards, I just could not just sit there. I was like, there's something I can do.
Holes was in the middle of writing a novel, part of a journey to reconnect with her Yupik culture. The author, who spent periods of her upbringing in Bethel, has family roots in the Yukon Delta village of Kotlik, which suffered damage from the October storm. Her father was also a principal across schools in the region, including Kipnuk.
I was like, wait, I could do something creative and connect with a nonprofit and get something rolling. Something physical that's positive and connects to my culture as well.
Holes began coordinating with the Alaska Community Foundation to host a fundraising sale of the children's book she was inspired to write. It's called Anuk, Amayer Sunset, and 50% of each sale goes directly to the Western Alaska Disaster Relief Fund to support families impacted by Typhoon Halong. The storybook was inspired by a moment Holes experienced with her son, Ashton. At the end of a stressful day, Holes says the two went for a drive.
During the drive, the most captivating sunset caught my attention. And I paused and I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, Ashton, look at that sunset. It's so beautiful. And my son was quiet for a second and he asked, am I your sunset? I lost my breath for a moment.
Hull says the book came from this seed of connection and meaning between parent and child. The story follows the layout of a poem, an adult responding to a child asking the same question in a backdrop of Yupik culture.
And then each page, it's almost like a poem, goes over like, yes, you are my sun, you are my moon. And there's lots of culturally significant imagery in there as well, like eating salmon berries, tundra tea, as well as like fishing and northern lights.
Hull says she hopes the book will find buyers and anyone looking to support relief efforts. But she also hopes copies find their way into the hands of those affected by the typhoon. The book features a journal section where families can record memories shared together.
I can't imagine what these families are going through right now. And I wanted to bring something positive and to their life. The main part of this story is what matters most is family moments with your family, these sweet moments throughout your day.
You can find a copy of Anuk, Am I Your Sunset at Barnes & Noble Booksellers online. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
That's all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Eric Stone in Juneau, from Simon Lopez in Homer, and from Samantha Watson in Bethel. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Jake Dye. Have a great night. Mm-hmm.